Now we move on into chapter 4 of 2 Samuel. And when Saul's son heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, his hands were feeble, and all the Israelites were troubled. Now here we have the story switching back to Ishbosheth, Saul's son. He's the man who is reigning as king. He was king primarily in name, not necessarily in deed, because Abner was the one who was holding his kingdom together, and Abner was the one who was really giving him all the power that he had. And so now he hears that Abner's dead in Hebron. And so you see how this leaves him without any kind of a political base. He really doesn't have the ability to carry on. He's lost all of his strength in the losing of Abner. So his hands were feeble, and all the Israelites were troubled. This brought great trouble over the whole nation. What's going to happen to us now? We don't really have a leader. We really are not a united kingdom. Should we go with David? Should we try to bolster up and give Ishbosheth more strength? What to do? But we find out that other events now are going to occur that are going to change some things. Verse 2, and Saul's son had two men that were captains of bands. And we're talking about Ishbosheth, two of his captains in the army. The name of the one was Baanah, and the name of the other was Rahab, the sons of Rimmon, a Beerothite of the children of Benjamin. For Beeroth also was reckoned to Benjamin. Now, these two men were captains in the army of Ishbosheth. One was named Baanah, the other was named Rahab. And they were sons of Rimmon, who was of the city of Beeroth. And Beeroth was in the tribe of Benjamin. So they were in the same tribe that Ishbosheth was in, the same tribe of Saul. And it may be through their political connections in this tribe that they had gotten up to this high point in the kingdom of Ishbosheth. They were captains in his army. Now, in parentheses, we don't know exactly why this is mentioned here, and the Beerothites fled to Gittaim and were sojourners there unto this day. So for some reason or other, they fled this city of Beeroth. It was originally a city that belonged to the Gibeonites, and they'd moved to another city nearby named Gittaim, and they were there unto this day. And Gittaim remained a well-known city, whereas Beeroth was forgotten. And when Nehemiah took his party back in to repossess the land, Gittaim is mentioned and Beeroth is not. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. Now we have another story interjected here about Jonathan's son. Jonathan, who was the son of Saul, he had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled, and it came to pass that she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. Now what happened is when Jonathan and Saul were slain in battle there at Jezreel, the nurse of Jonathan's son heard about this, and she no doubt was afraid the Philistines were going to come and do more damage to the family of Saul and Jonathan. Here was this son who was 5 years old, but he was one of the next in line for the kingship. He was next in line to receive the crown, and so she, acting in a hasty manner, wanted to protect him, and she made haste to flee, and he fell. And somehow in the fall, he injured his feet or his foot. He dislocated or broke a bone that wasn't properly set and didn't grow back right. And so he became lame. His name was Mephibosheth. Now, possibly because of his lameness, which is mentioned here, he was not able to really assume the crown. He could not be a proper heir to the crown because he just wasn't physically able to go about and see to the affairs of the nation. Well, in verse 5, and the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rahab and Baanah, went and came about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. So these two men came to the house of Ishbosheth. He was asleep on the bed at noon, and this may be a sign of his laziness, a sign of his inattendance to the affairs of the nation, a sign of his not really being concerned about the state the nation was in. He was on a bed at noon, apparently asleep. And they came thither into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat. Now the place where the wheat was stored was very near to the bedroom of Ishbosheth. That's the arrangement of things. And here are these men as captains in the army. Were coming under the guise of getting wheat to feed the soldiers. And apparently this was a job that they did often and frequently. And there was no surprise to anybody about them being there. And they smote him under the fifth rib. And Rahab and Baanah, his brother, escaped. So they killed Ishbosheth, smote him under the fifth rib. And it's further described, for when they came into the house, he lay on his bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and got them away through the plain all night. So they made an escape after having killed Ishbosheth. Now this was actually a brutal murder. They had no real reason to kill Ishbosheth. Very shortly before, he'd been their king. He was one they were loyal to. He had done nothing to them. He wasn't threatening them. He wasn't in any kind of mode of warfare or attack against them. But they had simply turned against him. They had decided to revolt. And consequently, then they used this as an opportunity to put him to death. But it was cold-blooded murder on their part. Here he was asleep on his bed, and they went in privately and killed him. Now, verse 8, and they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David to Hebron, and said to the king, behold, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life. And the Lord hath avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and of his seed. So they brought Ishbosheth's head to David, and they thought they were going to be doing David a great favor and a great honor. They thought David would be very pleased with this action of theirs. And so they felt like that they had really made themselves secure in the sight of the new king. But we're going to find that this is not the way it was at all. David was most displeased with this. Verse 9, and David answered Rahab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, and said unto them, as the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity. When one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought I would have given him a reward for his tidings. So David is so displeased with this that he makes an oath. He says, as the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity. So whatever David's going to do, he's going to claim to do it as a representative of God. Not that some man is influencing him to do this, but he's doing it as the work of the Lord. And of course, now he is the avenger of the Lord. He is the king. He does have authority and a capacity to do things that other people in the land couldn't do. And so he says, here you brought this head of Ishbosheth. You brought me evidence that you have killed him. And it reminds me of the time when one came and told me that Saul is dead. He thought he was bringing me good tidings. As a matter of fact, the man who told him Saul was dead actually took credit for having killed Saul, although that might not have been the truth. And since David doesn't mention the fact that he killed Saul here, then maybe he had since learned that it was a fabrication. But anyway, he came telling David that Saul's dead, thinking that David was going to be very pleased and he was bringing him good tidings. And it so displeased David, especially when the man admitted with his own mouth that he was the one who had killed Saul, that David had him put to death. So he said, when one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking he had brought me good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag. That's before David ever made it over to Hebron, while he was still in the land of the Philistines. And he slew him in Ziklag, who thought I would have given him a reward for his tidings. So the man was expecting a reward, and he got put to death. He got the death sentence because David was so displeased with this despicable act, the very thought of him having put Saul the king to death. So he says here in verse 11, how much more when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed? Now if I felt that way towards this man who brought me the news about Saul's death and who claimed to have put him to death, how much more am I going to feel badly when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house, upon his own bed? Now here, he looks upon and regards Ish-bosheth as a righteous person. Now, we see this is another good quality of David. Every time he has an opportunity, he does play up the better qualities of other persons, even his enemies, the enemies of which included people like Saul and this man Ish-bosheth. Ish-bosheth may have thought that he was doing the right thing, actually. Others were putting him up to being the king. He was, in the eyes of the land, in the eyes of the nations round about, he was the rightful predecessor to Saul. He was his son, and the crown should have gone down to his son in the eyes of men. However, we know that David had been anointed by God to be the king, but in that sense, he could have been a righteous person. And he was righteous toward those who put him to death. He had done them no harm. They had accepted him as king. They were serving him, and he had no doubt fulfilled all the obligations that he had to them. And so David calls him a righteous person. Here he is in his own house upon his bed. He wasn't out attacking anyone. He wasn't causing anyone to be in danger. He wasn't in warfare. He was asleep in his own bed, so they had come in and committed a heinous murder. So he says, "Shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth?" So David now pronounces the death sentence upon those who had killed Ish-bosheth. So in verse 12, "And David commanded his young men, and they slew them, and cut off their hands and their feet, and hanged them up over the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ish-bosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron." So these two men were put to death. They have given the death sentence because they were guilty of murder by their own mouth. No evidence needed to be given. They had the head of Ish-bosheth, and they admitted with their own mouths that they were guilty of the murder. So David had to put to death. And it was against the law to hang the bodies up, but he did cut off their hands and their feet and hang them over the pool in Hebron to be a deterrent, to be a warning to others, to show that David was now not only the king, but he was carrying out the duties of a king. He was punishing those who were guilty of this heinous murder. He was also showing the rest of the nation that he wasn't behind this killing of Ish-bosheth, that he wasn't assassinating him, that that wasn't his method of operation at all. And they took Ish-bosheth's head and gave it all the respect that could be given, in that they buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. Abner had had a very similar death. He'd been murdered, and he had been mourned, and he'd been given a great burial. And so they gave the honor that they possibly could to Ish-bosheth by burying his head in the same place, the head of the spurious king of Israel. So we come to the end of chapter 4 of 2 Samuel. And this is a very interesting facet of the story of David, because it does show that David's character was not such as to have any part in the assassination or the murder of his adversaries. Men like Abner, like Saul, and like Ish-bosheth, who had all opposed him in being the king, who had all fought against him, but yet whenever they were put to death, he was very sorry for it. He was not pleased at all with the work of those who had done these crimes of death, and consequently he removes himself from any guilt or any taint brought on by these murders. So that concludes chapter 4 of 2 Samuel. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.